Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and lucky us, former U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo is back with us now, a writer of the Muskogee Nation. Harjo is the first Native person to have served as U.S. Poet Laureate. She's authored books of poetry. She's authored plays, children's books, and two memoirs. And oh, by the way, as some of you know, she's also a musician. But she's here today because one of her poems, published 40 years ago, has taken on new life as a children's book. The poem and the new children's book are called Remember. Accompanying illustrations by Caldecott medalist and member of the Tlingit Nation, Michaela Goad, Remember, the book Remember, invites young readers to reflect on the world around them and how we're all connected. The author's note reads, Remember came into the world to remind me who I am as a human being living on this generous earth. We all need to be reminded to remember. So, Joy Harjo, it's always an honor. Welcome back to WNYC. So glad you could join us today.
Yes, where are you?
I can hear you. I am broadcasting from the ether. And so glad you're back with us. I understand that you've agreed to start by reading the poem, Remember, short enough for that in this segment. So I'm going to give you the floor, and we're all ears.
Okay, just start in, huh?
Yep. Or if you want to set it up, that's up to you.
This is the poem, Remember, now a children's book with illustrations by Michaela Goad from Random House. Remember the sky you were born under. Know each of the stars' stories. Remember the moon, know who she is. Remember the sun's birth at dawn. That is the strongest point of time. Remember sundown and the giving away tonight. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father. He is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth. We are earth. Remember the plants, trees, animal life, who all have their tribes, their families, their histories too. Talk to them. Listen to them. They are live poems. Remember the wind. Remember her voice. She knows the origin of this universe. Remember you are all people and all people are you. Remember all is in motion, is growing, is you. Remember you are this universe and this universe is you. Remember.
Thank you so much. That was so beautiful. Can you talk about why Remember? You're obviously, or to my ear, you're trying to place an individual in the context of everything, that we're not individuals disconnected from other things. We're not islands unto ourselves. We're connected in all the ways that you just recited. Is that what you're getting at? And if so, why do you connect it to memory, remember, as the organizing principle?
Okay, that's a good question. This poem, I wrote this poem when I was still an undergraduate writing student, I think. And the way I think about it now, after all of these years, it's probably been 50 years since I wrote this poem, is that I needed to remember. It was an admonishment to me as the poet, as the beginning poet. I mean, I had no idea what would unfold as I continued, you know, my journey, but it was something that I needed to know or to remember. And the way I think about memory, it's a living, kind of a living story field with many dimensions, and it moves, it's constantly moving into the past, present, and future. So that, in a way, to say remember, it's like, remember is like, you know, here you are, you're a living dynamic being. And in this story field, you're not the only one. Everyone has a place. Everyone has a story. And when I say everyone, I also mean the animals and the plants and winds and elements. And there is no hierarchy in the sense that one is not more than the next, but every story, so to speak, in the story field is needed and absolutely necessary. That's why they're here.
So it's political in a way too, right? I mean, it's reminding individuals to be humble about themselves and remember the broader context of the world. Would you say it's political? Would you use that word on one level?
Yes, and I think I grew up at a time with some incredible mentors and who taught me that, like the poet Audre Lorde, Adrienne Rich. Uh-huh. I was around when even the idea of multicultural literature was a new thing in the schools, is that, yes, it is definitely, in the sense that, you know, it's a different kind of world when you understand or you go about your life knowing that we're all related and there is no hierarchy and that we are all Earth, we are all one being, then a story. Then if your guiding story says that you are special as a particular group of human beings and only you have the right to ownership, that you own everything on Earth and it all belongs to you, yes, it becomes it's very political.
Maybe it'll be banned in Florida. I don't know. Have they tried to do that yet?
I think they're working on. Who knows what craziness and insanity will happen.
And it's a poem that has apparently, I understand, been recited in part or in full at weddings, and funerals, and cultural ceremonies of various kinds. Did you imagine that this poem would live on in so many different ways when it came to you?
No, I didn't. I mean, most writers, poets, even musicians, I mean, you know, you perform eventually, but most of your work takes place in that, in the imagination and in sitting in a room, working, listening. That's what I think of it as, kind of a call and response process with listening. And no, I had no idea. I mean, this poem is on the Lucy spacecraft now as it travels towards Jupiter, and it's
really,
yes,
I didn't know that.
Yes, it's gone to have a life of its own, and it, you know, who knows, it's hooked into something that I could never have imagined.
What do you mean it's on the Lucy spacecraft? Is there a piece of paper with the poem on the spacecraft?
No, and I'm not the only one. There are several. I think there's even a quote from Paul McCartney from a song. There's I think part of a poem from different people. I think Billy Collins has a poem on. They've attached actually pieces of literature to the spacecraft. So it's not just in paper.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Actually on the spacecraft.
So as it passes by Mars on the way to Jupiter, the Martians can read it and say, wow, those humans, they got something going.
Yeah, right, as if they could read. read
they
we're
don't
right.
read English? In yeah, America, we think everybody's supposed to read English.
So there you go. There you go. Political.
What? I can't help it. What gave you the idea to make it a children's book?
I think it's been a long time coming. I've had people come to me with proposals for films, all sorts of things. And when this came up as a possible children's book, it made a lot of sense. And it makes a lot of sense. So I've been working on it with you know, Random House, Lee Wade. And then we picked the artist, Michaela Goad, and wonderful, wonderful artist. Her first, not her first illustration, but the Water Protectors, you know, is pretty... is amazing, and it was interesting when we were first talking about this collaboration, because it is a collaboration. She said, "Well, I can use Muskogee images, and so I can research. Or would you mind if I used images from my own Tlingit culture?" And my thought is, "Well, we're bringing you on because of who you are, and I told her to go for it, and she went for it. I think this, her images are just, they're profound and incredible.
So Tlingit culture, that's a Northwest nation, and she's Alaskan, right?
Yes. Yes, up in the southeast, what they call the southeast up there. She lives in Sitka near Juneau.
And is there a way that you can start to describe the visuals on the air? I'm looking at the book, but it's a little beyond me. So what, to put it into words, maybe you can do it and talk about how it reflects Tlingit culture, or just what your visual and her visual idea for setting the poem Remember is.
Yes, I wish you were here to talk about it, but actually this raven is very involved, I think, in their origin story, and it starts out with Remember the Sky You Were Born Under, and here is Raven and the sky and the dark sky, and then the raven, I think, who is white at one point, and then there's a story about how that changed. But the images, I noticed there's always a circling round. I mean, you could probably, even if you were to lay all the images out, there would be a huge circle. And so it's always emphasized that we're part of the circle. And it's always filled with these images, water images like kelp and all the animals. One of my favorites, here's a little seal going around, and you can see the baby, the growing baby in the seal's body. It's so beautiful. And, you know, she uses those motifs of the art, the traditional art up there, and yet it's so personable and warm. But there's always this, you always see the connection of the human beings with the plants and the trees and the animals, and it's her artwork is stunning.
And I see in the artist's note that's in the book, the ocean and rainforest settings reflect our ancestral home in Southeast Alaska, and the animals and plants I included hold special cultural significance. I also hint at traditional stories, as well as referencing traditional dances and regalia. That's a lot of work for the illustrations to do. They also just jump off the page. They're so vivid and vibrant. I guess it's, you know, the kind of illustration that's classic children's book in a certain way that does jump off the page and makes kids of certain ages go, ooh, I want to look at that.
Yes, I think kids of all ages, we all have a child with we all have that. I think it's a children's book, but I see it too as a book that it's a great book for a gift and so on. I also think of it too, for myself personally, as an honoring of teachers, because to even have these words or this poem, I've had many mentors in my life, and one was a Tlingit woman who wrote poetry and translated and was very culturally centered, Nora Dauenhauer, and we went on tour once years ago in the 80s, a performing tour, a reading tour all around Alaska, everywhere from Fairbanks to Kotzebue to Barrow. I think they said we did the first poetry reading up in Barrow years ago. But yeah, so I think of, when I see this, I think, okay, Nora, you know, here it is, and thank you for your teachings, and then all the teachings. You know, we all have many teachers. One of my teachers has been the ocean. And so I can see the teachers or the teachings all through this book in the illustrations and in the words.
212-433-WNYC is our phone number, as we can take one or two phone calls before we run out of time, with former U.S. Poet Laureate Joy Harjo, whose classic poem Remember, originally published in 1983, is out now in a children's book edition, an illustrated children's book edition, as we've been describing, called Remember. And Jane in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Joy Harjo. Hi, Jane.
Hi, I feel honored to be on with a fantastic poet. I have a question. It's sort of a wonky poetry question. Poetry has always seemed off-putting to me. I read it silently in my room, and I'm like, I don't get it. What's it about? I'm not good enough to read this poem. But lately, through some circumstance, I've been in situations where people read poems or read their poems like you read so beautifully, and the poem becomes alive to me, and I've likened it sort of to music, and the reading it silently is like reading sheet music. But when the group plays it or the musician plays it, it comes alive. So I wonder, my question is, do you think that poetry is really an oral tradition and an oral form? And then how do you reconcile your writing silently in your space, and then it comes alive in a different way when you read it or other people read it? So if you get my question, I'm wondering about that, because poetry has become a lot more fantastic for me personally since I've hit on listening to it and interacting.
That's a good question, Jane in the Bronx. I really appreciate that, and I'm going to borrow what you said, like reading sheet music, because that's the thing, is like so much of us are taught poetry in schools. I don't even know if they still teach it, but we used to have, you know, a poetry unit, and everyone dreaded it because the teacher dreaded it. And I think the reason we dreaded it is not because, you know, it was because we were supposed to read it in order to understand what the poem was saying. And what if you listened to Hotel California by the Eagles and you were expected to explain it first or somebody else's lyrics? It's not about that. It's about orality. Even if it's on paper, you know, even a novel really has roots of orality, you know, in storytelling. And so it is meant to be spoken, and I think a lot of poets would agree that when we are writing, it's about listening, but we're also taking into consideration, you know, the orality of the poem, even if it's on paper. That's always so important. So it is definitely a sound art, and I put it there with music. I mean, if you go to the Indigenous Roots of All Poetry, you will find music and dance there with it, all of them supporting each other. So, yeah, so there's definitely something to that. And I know when I'm writing, I read aloud, and sometimes I sing it, but that's another story. But it's definitely an oral art. And it's not about knowing exactly what the poem means. That's not what it's about, the music of it. It's about, you know, it's about phrasing. And time and timelessness and all, and enjoying the ride, just like you would look at a painting, and there's so many aspects of it, you know, that give meaning.
And if time was timeless, we would keep having this conversation, but we are out of it. What a treat to have Joy Harjo on reading Remember and talking about the new children's book version of it with illustrations by Michaela Goad. Joy, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.